Say something to the FBI. I bet you're stuck in it. It's getting harder every day to think of better things to say about what's going on around you and what's happening inside you. When it's time to change, you won't know how. It's one bad idea from now.
All right, my friends, welcome back to the Weekend Interview Show. I'm your host, Scott Horton. My website is weekendinterviewshow.com, and I'm on the Republic Broadcasting Network, operating out of Austin, Texas, where it's legal to murder someone if you're a cop. But we'll talk about that more in the next hour. Right now, I want to welcome back to the show my friend Anthony Gregory. Anthony?
Hi, it's good to be back.
It's great to have you here. Everybody, if you don't already read what Anthony writes, you should. It's good stuff. He writes for LouRockwell.com. He also writes for the Independent Institute, where he works. He also writes for the Future Freedom Foundation, for StrikeTheRoot.com. There's dashes in between the strike and the root there. And Liberty Magazine, Libertarian Enterprise. Who'd I leave off? Who else do you write for, Anthony?
Just Rational Review sometimes.
All right, there you go. So Anthony writes all the time, at least two or three times a week. Really great stuff, particularly his stuff at Strike the Root and at LouRockwell.com. I really like. And, hey, Anthony, so just now I finished wrapping up this interview with Bruce Merkin from the Marijuana Policy Project. We were talking about the Supreme Court's decision. And I thought, which I'm sure you're at least somewhat familiar with what happened, where they upheld the right of the federal cops to prosecute people for smoking pot, even if they have a doctor's prescription and it's legal in their home state.
Right, that's right. Even if it's grown in the home state.
Even if it's grown in their own yard, and they don't even buy it.
Yeah, that's right. It was a horrible decision, of course. It's very interesting. It's just one more sign that the liberals aren't very good on civil liberties issues when they're in power, because all the liberal judges voted against common sense, against federalism, against liberty.
Because they might have been scared they were going to set a precedent against the New Deal, huh?
Well, yeah, that would have. I mean, the thing is, though, I doubt that would have happened. But if that had happened, that would have been great, of course. But I believe it was Thomas and Rehnquist and
O'Connor.
O'Connor, right? Were the dissenters, and I doubt that they would take the principles of decentralism and liberty in the 10th Amendment to the extreme that I think would be appropriate. But in this instance, they were on the right side. Of course, it's not always that way.
Yeah, it's funny. The same people, they just trade off back and forth. Where, you know, in fact, the previous guest was pointing out Scalia had voted to strike down the federal law that said you can't have a gun within this close to a school zone and that kind of thing. And
that's right.
Here he's on the wrong side of this, and Clarence Thomas is the guy that said George Bush can torture whoever he wants. He's the president.
That's right. Even American citizens. And this time, he's on the side of reason. And yet, there was that recent gun case. I think it was the guy from Japan. And to see if he could have a gun, having been convicted of some, I think it was a victimless technical crime in Japan. If that applied to the United States, and the liberals in that decision oddly voted to say, yeah, he can have a gun, and the conservatives, the ones who said, no, he can't, were mostly the conservatives. Now, people will argue about the Constitution, the exact language there, but putting that all aside, just for the second, it's interesting that we have liberal judges occasionally being the ones standing up for the right to have a gun, and the conservatives standing up for the right to self-medicate. This shows that, first of all, there's a lack of principle on the part of almost anyone in Washington and in government, including in the judiciary. And, of course, I'm talking about most people. Some people are better than others, but that's one thing it shows. It also shows that this whole left-right thing is a very flawed concept. For years, libertarians have been saying the left is for these kinds of liberties and against these other kinds of freedoms, and the conservatives kind of reverse that. But I think we libertarians have for a long time kind of been oversimplifying it and maybe contributing to the confusion, because it's clearly not that clear cut.
Well, right, and as time goes on, old coalitions kind of break up. I mean, without a Soviet Union, there's less and less for a real libertarian to have in common with a conservative now.
Sure. I mean, some libertarians will try to find the they'll try to look at about a third of the Bush administration's economic rhetoric, but you can't even go by all of the rhetoric, and certainly not on all issues, but on some economic issues, sometimes Bush will sound somewhat better than some Democrats. But that's about all they've really got going for them now.
Great. So now back to the drug thing, and now, didn't Bush run in the year 2000? Didn't he promise that he would respect federalism and the right of the states to have their own laws regarding medical pot?
Yes, he did. In fact, in 2000, I didn't vote for either I didn't vote for him or Gore, but I had a slight preference for Bush. He sounded like he was a little bit less bad on a number of issues, and one was that. Yeah, he specifically said he thought it was a states' rights issue. I thought that was great, and you know, it's not the only issue, but it'd be nice to see the drug war dismantled, even if slowly, even if on the federal level first, very slowly with medical marijuana. It'd be nice to see some progress as opposed to the continued persecution of people who use it for medical reasons.
Well, you know, it was in the news here in Texas a couple of days ago. A new police chief took office in Nuevo Laredo and was killed on his first day on the job. And they're saying that it's, you know, drug wars going on and different cartels fighting over dominance. And this was the only guy in town brave enough to take the job. Apparently a bunch of people had turned it down, and he got whacked his first day on the job. And, you know, I have this problem where instead of just saying, you know, oh, here's the thing, well, here's my reaction, such as, well, obviously the federal government should go in there and kill all the bad guys who killed this cop, you know, find them and hunt them down and smoke them out of their caves and like that. But I got this goofy thing that I do where I try to think in like two or three steps and try to figure out, you know, really these gangs who are going around killing each other and fighting for dominance, what they're fighting over is a black market. And that really, if they would just legalize the drugs, all these guys would be out of business. You'd have, you know, some New York-controlled conglomerate would sell all the cocaine, and it'd be dirt cheap.
Mm-hmm.
The government intervention has driven up the price, you know, because a smuggler who's risking years in a cage of his life, he's got to get paid. That price gets artificially driven up by the war itself.
Oh, of course. I'm still surprised to occasionally encounter people who don't seem to understand the economics of the drug war, the basic fact that the drug war is the reason that these drugs are so expensive, and it is the principal reason for all of this gang violence. I mean, people bring up this point all the time, but I guess it never becomes antiquated. That is, the same thing happened during alcohol prohibition. And, of course, there aren't gangs fighting in the streets that much over Jim Beam and Johnny Walker. there was horrible violence in Chicago, especially during the 20s when the stuff was illegal. Of course, people still drank lots of alcohol.
Why do you think it is that the lesson of prohibition doesn't seem to be applied to the very same effects, as you said, in the current war on drugs?
Well, what? I think that with just like many aspects of government policy, the people have been largely bamboozled into believing in a lot of things that aren't true about the drugs, believing that these drugs, these inanimate objects, are this great scourge that people, as individuals, can't control themselves in respect to, that these drugs take people over. Now, it's, of course, true that drugs have the potential to be very dangerous to people. Legal drugs, illegal drugs, they're poison with some benefits or some perceived benefits. But it's largely a cultural thing. Of course, that's how alcohol first became illegal, was people were they were over time eventually convinced that it needed to be outlawed, but it didn't work. And I'd say it's the same thing. I think it's propaganda, and people just aren't used to the drugs not being outlawed. The drugs have been illegal for a long time. The federal war on drugs has been going on since 1914, in one sense. And before 1914, you know, any child could walk into a pharmacy and buy heroin. It was that simple. Heroin, the word heroin is a brand name that the Bayer Company, the same company that makes aspirin, came up with. And they sold it and measured doses.
Well, and I don't think you'd probably argue that it's a good idea to sell heroin over the counter to a kid, but, I mean, assuming that somebody is 18 years old, you brought up this point in one of your articles that primarily what we're talking about here is self-ownership. And that really, if you're over 18, it's really nobody's business, even if you want to be a crackhead.
Well, sure. I'd say ultimately, I mean, it's not a good decision, I would say personally, but if you own yourself, then that should be your decision in the end. Now, I wasn't saying that it's a good idea to give heroin to kids, but, you know, heroin is a drug that, if it were legal, it would probably be used in hospitals, because it's not much different chemically than morphine or any of these other opiates. It's just stronger, so it would actually have fewer side effects. Now, it can be very addictive, but, you know, the Rush Limbaugh was on OxyContin, which really isn't that different from heroin. That's not to say he didn't have a tragedy, that it wasn't very hard for him or that it wasn't bad. I don't know. But he functioned to some extent. He had a successful radio show during that whole stint. Mm-hmm. And he shouldn't have ever been thrown in jail. And that's the point. And it should go for him and it should go for others, whether it's a problem they have or they want to use these things medically with the advice of their doctor or whatever.
Well, the thing is, you know, pot can grow pretty much anywhere in a ditch, but heroin and cocaine are, I guess, 99.9% of the time produced outside of the country and imported to the United States. And I know that this has been one of the main reasons used to justify some of the clampdown on the border recently and the Minuteman Project and stuff. Are always invoking these drug gangs on the border that are out of control, that are armed to the teeth, that commit all these murders, and something must be done. And, of course, the idea of, well, maybe we should undo something to take away their profits, that never crossed anybody's mind. But now they've used this as a something must be done, and the question is, what is being done as the result of all the pressure created by these problems?
The reason that drug gangs are violent here or anywhere is black market. And there's no way to, I mean, short, okay, this is another thing that people say often, but it's true. In prisons in America, the most regulated, the most watched, closely monitored institutions, where the government's right there, you know, searching you, and you're in a cage, they have a huge drug problem. They've caught mass murderers who are in solitary confinement with drugs. And if prisons have drugs, then they can turn America into a prison, and there will still be drug problems. It's just that simple. You can't eliminate addiction with force.
Well,
it's a different kind of problem. And you can't eliminate it with bombs either. Now the U.S. has extended its drug war to Latin America with Plan Colombia under Clinton, which has continued. And you can't just spray poison on some people in Latin America and think that that drug addiction, which is a problem in America, it's a problem that Americans are having. You can't just externalize all of the nasty parts of what you think the solution is on other countries and think that it's going to solve the problem.
Sure, I mean, it's a matter of economics again. You go and spray a field and destroy a bunch of crop, then all you did was just drive the price up and gave 30 more people a reason to want to join the business.
Yeah, that's right.
It's the most self-defeating thing in the world. Okay, well, now hang on a sec on the drug war. Now, let's assume for a minute that we live in a land of Republicans, which you may have noticed we do, and the drug war is not going away anytime soon. But now we really do have a problem, Anthony, with these black marketeer drug gangs running around on the border uncontrolled. Don't we need some border security to stop these illegal immigrants from coming in and committing all these crimes?
Well, I don't think that having border guards keeping immigrants out is something the government should do. I think to the extent that immigration makes anything in America worse, it's because there's too much government. It's because the government has regulated the economy so much and has eliminated the freedom of association. It's because so much of the land in America and so much property in America is socialized, so there's this issue of it's the tragedy of the commons, and it's because of the welfare state. And those are the problems. And immigration is, some people don't like immigration. Some people think that immigration makes these other problems worse, but the fact is that you can't secure all the borders. I mean, we have lots of borders, and central planning doesn't work. Socialism doesn't work. A government trying to keep people out, it's going to hurt our freedoms. Look at what happened with the Real ID Act. There was a lot of pressure from below. The Minutemen, some of them went to D.C. along with a lot of other people who were upset about immigration, and now we have the National ID Act. It's not going to solve anything, but it is making America a lot less free.
All right, everybody. I'm Scott Horton. I'm talking with Anthony Gregory. His website is anthonygregory.com. He writes for Lou Rockwell and Independent Institute. We'll be right back. My friends, welcome back to the Weekend Interview Show. I'm talking with Anthony Gregory, who writes for, I think, every libertarian publication on earth, including antiwar.com, lewrockwell.com, Strike the Root, Libertarian Enterprise, the Independent Institute. I know I'm leaving some off, Rational Review, Liberty Magazine, and he writes great stuff. And before we went out to the break there, we were talking about the Minutemen and pressure for tightening the border, particularly the border with Mexico. And you already sort of described how the national government is incapable of sealing the border, that no matter how many cops you put there, central planning doesn't work. It's not going to ever succeed. So I wonder if you must probably support the Minutemen then, because they're a private organization, decentralized, just going around protecting their property rights. Right, Anthony?
Well, here's the thing. When the Minutemen are calling the feds because they see immigrants crossing the border on so-called public property, I object to what they're doing because I don't think they're helping. To the extent that they're just keeping people off their private land, that's their property, right? But from what I've seen in reading the Minuteman Project website, looks like it's specifically against their rules to confront people head on, and what they're really about is alerting the authorities. When I would prefer more that, I don't want violence to break out, but if it's an issue of trespass, then it's an issue of trespass. If it's an issue of immigrants coming across the border that aren't trespassing on private property, I think that it's a bad idea.
Well, so what do you want to do? I mean, they're illegal aliens. You don't just want to let them come on in as long as they can walk up the public street, do you, Anthony?
Well, I don't see I don't see what the problem is. Most of them come and they get jobs.
Yeah, but look how it ruined San Francisco to have all the Chinese come, right? Don't we need to, like, send all them back, too?
No, but it's interesting that some of the first major federal immigration legislation was the Chinese Exclusion Act, very explicitly biased and prejudiced and nativist, and it's always, you know, they had all kinds of horrible laws in San Francisco that targeted Chinese, especially Chinese businesses, because they didn't want to play fair on the free market.
Yeah, but Anthony, look at how much our culture has suffered by having all those Chinese immigrants here.
Point is, we're supposed to have, I think it was Jacob Hornberger who said it, a culture of freedom. That should be the culture of the United States. I'd say of the world, but in talking about the United States, San Francisco, look at the history of California. Look at the history of San Francisco. What was its culture? It's not like San Francisco was just filled with wasps. Going all the way back in history.
That's not an Anglo name, is it, San Francisco?
No, I don't believe so. I believe San Francisco is Spanish. And, of course, the point is that I have no objection to people protecting their private property, but I also have no objection to people making their own way, providing goods and services and labor on the free market. And I don't think that nation of origin should be the determining factor on whether you have natural rights respected. Natural economic rights, property rights, and the right to trade.
All right, everybody, hang tight. We'll be right back with one more short segment with my friend Anthony Gregory on the Weekend Interview Show.
Did you read this? Chicago just became the murder capital of America.
I don't understand. It's been a felony to have a gun since 95. I thought that was supposed to prevent murders, not increase them.
Criminals will always find a way to get guns, while the rest of us are just left defenseless.
Chicago authorities have seized over 75,000 firearms since 1995. And now, Chicago's murder rate is twice as high as New York City. Tonight, while you're asleep, criminals will be at work.
Not in Kennesaw, Georgia. In 1982, our city passed a law requiring every household to have a gun. It terrified the criminals, and our violent crime rate is now 75% below the national average. We sleep well here in Kennesaw.
Americans who own guns prevent over a million violent crimes every year and save lives. Get the facts. Visit armedandsecure.org. That's armedandsecure.org.
My friends, welcome back to the Weekend Interview Show. I'm Scott Horton, and I'm talking with my friend Anthony Gregory, who writes for the Independent Institute, Lou Rockwell, Strike the Root, the Libertarian Enterprise, Rational Review, Liberty Magazine, and antiwar.com, and something else. Anyway, his website is anthonygregory.com. You can read everything he writes there. And we're talking about, well, we were talking about the border, but I kind of want to segue this in with the Real ID Act, and really the gun control or the anti-gun control ad that just played here. The Real ID Act and gun control are basically work in the same way, in that they only apply to people who will never abide by them. You know, the purpose of having gun control laws supposedly is to disarm the criminals, but of course criminals are going to own guns anyway. That's what makes them criminals. They don't care what the law says, right? And it's the same thing with Real ID. Muhammad Atta's nephew isn't going to come over here and sign up and give his thumbprints and tell everybody his real name. The Real ID Act is for us, the people who aren't terrorists.
That's right. And, of course, I've seen no reason to believe that this Real ID Act would prevent something like 9/11 from happening. I believe they use forged IDs, which no matter what you do, you can't eliminate. You can't. The reason central planning doesn't work is because no central coercive monopoly can always have the information it needs to predict how people will try to circumvent what it does. There are millions of people. And the idea that any of this stuff, that the nationalized airport security, that the just all of these random searches of all these, of just, you know, of grandma, is that any of it's going to work better than the drug war has worked, or that gun control works.
Or the war on immigration.
That the war on immigration, the welfare. I mean, the U.S. can't keep order in Iraq, right? It's doing a horrible job. And that's just another central planning endeavor that's failed. It's interesting how much a lot of conservatives believe in socialism.
As long as it's shooting people.
Yeah, as long as it's, shooting people or maintaining law and order or ensuring a moral culture, they think that government will do a good job.
It's kind of ironic, isn't it, Anthony, how some of the people who are the harshest critics of illegal aliens in this country and who cry out the loudest for the government to stop them are the pretty much the same people who are so conservative that they don't trust a national ID card, even if it does come from the Bush administration. And they don't really realize, as you said, I believe in the earlier segment, they provide the pressure from below to justify. So you have a bunch of Minutemen and all their supporters, you know, all over the radio and everywhere else, saying, yeah, we have to stop these illegal immigrants. We have to stop them. And Congress says, okay, sure. Here's your new national ID card. There you go, pal. Thanks a lot for helping provide the pressure for us to talk about you guys on TV for a few days before we ran this law through.
Well, that's right. They were specifically protesting, gathering in D.C. saying, we want you to include this Real ID nonsense inside the appropriations for more militarism.
And so, again, as you said before, here's the problem, all this immigration that, as you say, is caused by government in the first place, particularly because they promise all these free benefits for anybody who moves here. And then their solution of piling more government on top of it only costs us in the end, huh?
Well, sure, though I don't think that most people come here for benefits. But to the extent that that's a problem, the problem is welfare. And there's just as much a problem with Native Americans or Native-born Americans.
Sure.
On welfare.
All right, well, we're all out of time. Thanks again, Anthony. Everybody, Anthony Gregory writes for LouRockwell.com.